Rosemary Martorana, Director of Intelligence here at the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and you're listening to Intelligence Unclassified. This podcast is exactly what the title states, unclassified information about current trends in homeland security for the state of New Jersey, as well as educational information and resources for your awareness. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow NJOHSP on Twitter at NJOHSP and Facebook. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njohsp.gov. Mark Ghilarducci serves as the director of the California Governor's Office of Emergency Services, appointed July 1st of 2013 by Governor Edmund G. Brown, Jr. Director Ghilarducci previously served as the secretary of the California Emergency Management Agency, appointed in February of 2012 by Governor Brown. As a member of the cabinet, he serves as the governor's Homeland Security Advisor and oversees statewide public safety, emergency management, emergency communications, counterterrorism efforts, and the state's threat assessment system. In 2000, he was appointed as Deputy Director of the California Governor's Office of Emergency Services, where he oversaw statewide emergency operations, planning, and training. Previously, he served as a federal coordinating officer with the U.S. Federal Emergency Management Agency. He has over 30 years of diversified service in both the public and private sectors, in the emergency services, fire and rescue, and homeland security disciplines. So, Mark, first and foremost, thank you very much for jumping on the call today. To get us started, maybe you could just talk about one potential threat or hazard that kind of keeps you up at night in California.
You know, the challenge in California, let me just start off by saying, is just its size and complexity. California, often called a nation state, you know, bumping 40 million people. We have an international border, 11 ports, a lot of infrastructure. So there's a lot of threat that actually exists in California. Probably the largest consequence event, however, that really would keep me up at night is that of a catastrophic earthquake. We're kind of an earthquake country out here, so making sure that we're planning accordingly for that and we've got resources in place. If you can really respond and deal with the cascading impacts and the scope and complexity of a catastrophic earthquake, you're pretty good about being able to deal with pretty much any other kind of event that may occur.
Absolutely. And so when you talk about these emergency response efforts as it relates to earthquakes, how do you share that information with your governor?
Well, you know, my particular position is a cabinet level secretary. I kind of oversee the public safety for California in emergency services and law enforcement and fire and rescue across the board. That incorporates the role of as an HSA. And Governor's Office of Emergency Services is also the Homeland Security Agency for California. You know, because being in the governor's cabinet and being his primary point person on public safety issues, I integrate and connect with him on a very regular basis. Either I'm in the governor's inner office working on policy-related issues associated with his agenda or legislative agendas and how that cross-references or correlates with public safety in the state and or crisis management, accordingly looking at the policies and procedures that we put in place to support those agendas.
And talking a little bit about your cyber efforts out there on the West Coast, I believe it was actually a year ago, almost to date, that Governor Jerry Brown signed a cybersecurity bill. Can you talk a little bit about that effort and how that may have transformed over the last year or so?
Absolutely. You know, it's been an interesting journey on the cyber issues. Actually, back in around 2013, from a security standpoint now, statewide, and watching what was evolving, not just in California, but nationally and internationally, as the threat of cyber attacks started to increase in complexity, we initially, you know, working with the governor's office, established a collaborative task force made up of public, private, non-governmental, academic groups, bringing them together in this task force to establish a dialogue and capability to discuss what the threat looked like to the various sectors and how we could come together because we understood pretty quickly that the cyber threat was not linear, is very asymmetrical, and it affected all the various infrastructure sectors, that we were going to have to do this in a collaborative way. And so we initially started by bringing together this task force to establish some guidelines and some recommendations that we could formulate to the governor and our legislature to build ultimately what he put in place just a year ago, and that was an executive order to establish the California Cybersecurity Integration Center. And they're really connecting very much in with the MSISAC. We've got our federal DHS and FBI counterparts, and we've co-located it with our state's primary fusion center, the State Threat Assessment Center. And the idea here is really in our journey to really take what is really a new threat stream, one that's really evolving, to be able to, one, provide a baseline from the state's perspective as to what are our gaps and seams, what are our vulnerabilities. And once we understood those, the process of being able to look at those threat streams and be able to either, first of all, share that information with the folks that were being targeted, but also to be able to put systems in place that would either divert or thwart the impact of those particular threats. And then also begin the process of pulling together the various state agencies, many of them who have had some individual level of cyber responsibility, but have been historically working in what I would call sort of a siloed fashion, bringing them together in this center so that we were all looking and working together, seeing the same kinds of things, and then being able to collectively, you know, address those threats to be able to mitigate them. So really, it's a baseline assessment of where we were at as a state. It was an education process to be able to increase the knowledge of our executives as well as our state employees, but not just state employees, also employees at the local government level and academia, et cetera, and then working with our private sector partners to be able to pull in their great expertise, and then the ability to identify the threat streams and put some sort of a response in the middle of that to either mitigate or reduce or respond accordingly. Part of that is if there's a criminal predicate that is involved with that threat, then our whole law enforcement machine kind of goes into action. But where historically they had done that on an individual basis, they now are doing that in a coordinated way and are supported by the integrated center. So several things happening that really changing the way of doing business, changing our culture with regards to the cyber threat, increasing the knowledge of the threat overall, and then getting everybody on the same page from a state that, you know, arguably is large and complex, but getting everybody moving in the same direction to address the threat.
Absolutely. And I want to follow up with two additional questions. The first is, how difficult was it per se, or maybe it wasn't, to really sell this newly developed center to your private sector industries throughout California? Are you able to afford them any protective measures when it comes to having them share information with state and local law enforcement partners?
Well, that's a good question, because I think the way we approached this journey was initially establishing this collaborative task force that we opened up the dialogue. We built relationships of trust. We talked about what protections exist and what didn't exist, and maybe what legislation needed to be moved forward to establish additional protections. But because of that effort, I believed that that really helped to get the private sector feeling much more confident that we were one team, one fight in this effort to be able to address this adversary. So that was the first part. And that actually has paid dividends because, you know, we have now seen a great participation and a partnership with our private sector partners. They've been providing us some great information. And we have found that even when there is activity or there's, you know, some sort of cyber threat, they are willing to open up their systems or make contact with us. They're already integrated, but they're much more willing to share that information today. Now, are we 100% of where we need to be? Not yet. I mean, there are still sectors, for example, the health sector, that tends to want to keep that information rather limited. And, you know, we know that there have been denial of service attacks to hospitals and other kinds of health facilities that have resulted in, you know, major problems there. So we are not where we need to be 100% yet, but we're certainly feeling comfortable that we're on that journey. And a lot of that is because we are building those levels of trust.
Understood. And so that being said, beyond just the idea of creating a task force that brings all of these public and private sector partners together, do you have any other recommendations you would offer or lessons learned to maybe other states or law enforcement entities looking to build a similar capability in their jurisdictions?
Well, this is a very challenging sort of threat. I mean, most of our terrorism threats are challenging. And even now, with the increase in homegrown violent extremism, being able to identify where that's going to pop up and, this whole transfer from the once, sort of spectacular Al-Qaeda kind of attacks to these individual sort of radicalized attacks in communities, it's harder to identify those. Same with the cyber threat. And really, this really requires a very concerted outreach and effort to build those partnerships, public, private, non-governmental, and academic. Our academic institutions, we have a lot of them in California, are kind of open architectures for information loss and cyber attacks. Those relationships are absolutely critical, and I can't underscore enough that where possible, the government entities that have a responsibility for cyber response and homeland security protection really work hard. It doesn't necessarily have to be a task force, but an HSA working with their respective chief information security office. First of all, those connections need to be there so that you've got, the security piece and the CISO piece working together. And then they collectively reach out to their private sector partners and show that they have a unified capability there, and then engage that dialogue with private sector partners and really listen to them, bring them into the fold. Not necessarily from the standpoint of just saying, hey, we want to have a meeting with you, but I think it has to be tangible and actionable so that the private sector not only gets something out from the government sector, and what we need from them, quite frankly, is their ability to provide us with their technical expertise, as well as share with us the information that they're seeing. So really it's that takes an extra effort, but I think it really does pay dividends, and that would be the biggest recommendation to other states. And then lastly would be, once you've gotten that, there may be some need for building some legislation in the area of cybersecurity that would reinforce that partnership between public and private so that they feel as comfortable that the government is not just there to extract information from them, but it's truly a partnership.
Absolutely. That's a really great point. So, Mark, I want to conclude our podcast today by asking you one other question. If my memory serves me correct, there are approximately five NFL teams in California. And so I have to ask the question, since we also have two teams that are not technically New Jersey teams, but they do play in the great state of New Jersey, who do you see as a leading contender for this season?
Wow, you can get me on a that's a tough one. Well, it's not going to be the 49ers, I could tell you that, which is the team I grew up with. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it'll be a California team this year, to tell you the truth. But if it would be, I'm going to hope for the Raiders. I think maybe they're coming on strong this year.
Excellent. Thank you, Mark. Well, I will say this. We enjoy working with the team in California, and despite the distance, we somehow seem to always find you.
Well, happy to do it. And, again, all the HSAs, we talk regularly. In fact, I was on a call with all of them earlier this morning. And really, this is one team, one fight across the country in dealing with the terrorism-related issues. And so happy to support the podcast effort. And thank you for doing it. And certainly, if there's anything that we could do or the team out here can do in the future or anything you're interested in California, never hesitate to ask.
Again, all links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njohsp.gov. Thanks again for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.